This is HPR episode 2826 entitled HPR Community News for May 2019 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 58 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in May 2019.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Hacker Public Radio Community News. Joining me this evening is...
I'm Yannick, the French guy from Switzerland.
And this is Jerome Betten from the Netherlands.
The Dutch guy from the Netherlands. And I'm Ken Fallon, the Irish Dutch guy from the Netherlands. And this is HPR Community News for May 2019. We hear in the grapevine that Dave is having audio issues, so we wait in silent anticipation for him. This is a show. HPR is a community podcast network where the shows are contributed by listeners exactly like you. And I mean exactly like you, as in, if you haven't contributed to the show and you're listening to HPR, then it's about time you did submit a show. The initial spring burst of shows is more or less coming to an end, and we're looking forward to the Northern Hemisphere dry season as we go into the summer months. So sending your shows in for the summer months would be absolutely an ideal thing to do. This show is a summary of the shows that have occurred in the last month, plus any interesting news or topics that have come up in the preceding month. And as always, we start by welcoming our new hosts, today read by...
As soon as I find where they are.
Dave goes to all this trouble to put the show notes together.
But
He clicked link.
I clicked the link. Oh, yes.
He goes to new hosts.
Right at the top of the page, yes.
Yep,
so welcome JLD and ZenFloater 2.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining the network. So, first of all, let's mosey through some of the shows that we had last month.
Yes. So, on the 1st of May, updates on my Raspberry Pi 3B, Open Media Vault, and Nextcloud instances by JWP. A short podcast on how my little home servers are working or not.
Yes, this was an excellent little summary of how you would get... Open Media Vault running on Pi. Very interesting.
Yeah. Well, surprised. Everything that runs on a Pi is interesting.
Yeah, there was a... He talks about Nextcloud, I see. But there was a talk about the Nextcloud guy who initiated the project. And that was in the Netherlands 2 weeks ago. It's an amazing product, what it can do. It's really up there with a lot of functionality. Amazing stuff.
I think we interviewed him on the FOSDEM at some point as well, the FOSDEM series. Open Media Vault is the next generation of network attached storage solutions based on Debian Linux, giving you SSH, SFTP, SIFS, and DAAP music, rsync, BitTorrent, etc. Modular design and framework. Pretty cool. So the following day we had OCK 13 fixed with field processing. Oh, thank you, Be Easy, for this. Thank you so much. Those of us who suffer text will thank you for this. A very clear, short and simple show by Be Easy.
Yeah, and it's amazing how many file you can get with fixed colon, even though you know, CSV tends to be the norm, even though it's a horrible format. But yeah, still have some fixed column files to manage, and that show was really helpful.
Yeah, I bookmarked this one because every so often it comes out. My go-to thing up until now has been replace multiple spaces with some sort of delimiter character, and it was kind of ugly, or split the file, splitting them off into various different chunks. But this is how it should be done. Thank you very much, Beezy. I don't know, does he especially realize how much help his shows are to people?
I guess you never realize how helpful a show can be until, you know, you post it there and people comment about that. So,
yeah, maybe it's just I happen to be processing, doing the same sort of stuff that he's doing in other shows will be equally as interesting to other people. Then the following day, we had my 50th show. This is an excellent idea by Tony Hughes. Who'd have thought? 50 shows, Tony.
Yeah.
Well done. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah. 50 Yay. Shows. Hoo-hoo.
We should actually do something about this. Dave, make a note. Dave, where are you, Dave?
Send a bottle of champagne, please.
Absolutely. We should.
A virtual. Yeah.
Should be possible to. I'll buy him a beer at Odd Camp. How about that? We can all buy him a beer at Odd Camp.
Yeah.
How about that? Or a coffee or something.
We will all be there.
Beverage of choice. That's
we all buy him beers, and after that we record everything he says and we make a show out of it.
Well, that's pretty much on camp for us anyway.
Exactly.
And then we had the HBR community news, a show whereupon there were two comments. The first by Clacky. Oh God, Yggdrasil and Hollywood, you didn't mention Hugo Weaving because a superhero movie is a credible source for accuracy, but for reference because he happened to be accurate. Okay, fair enough. I have no idea what we were talking about. I can barely remember what happened yesterday, to be honest. Anyone want to do a second comment, or shall I continue butchering his?
Oh, let me give it a try for once. Okay, so the next one was by
Oscon. Oscon.
Hakon Koskon 2019. Anyway, he says, I'm aware of the conference, but frankly, I haven't seen anything in the schedule that would draw me there. It's a mix of corporate promotion, blockchain, and random student projects. Nothing about languages or development frameworks or services, which is what interests me the most. I don't feel a free software pulse there. No work toward building a Hong Kong free software community. Okay.
Yeah. OzCon was pushed by the O'Reilly Book Association and is, yeah, I've always found it a bit strange. It's, as he summarizes, it was started in the US, but again, yeah.
Yeah, Tim O'Reilly has always been a big proponent of the open source way of business and community and business models, but also the community stuff. So if it's an O'Reilly event, in a way I would try to give him the benefit of the doubt, although I can imagine that people say, well, you know, it's not grassroots enough for me to be interested. I can imagine that.
Very expensive for a start. It's expensive.
Well, there's that too.
So the following day, we had our bash shell, bash local variables local by Clacky. And this is in the bash scripting series. And he wrote a very nice little short bash scripts that you can use to find out what the actual behavior of variables in bash is. This has caught me out on more than one occasion.
Yeah. I always, when I use a variable, I always have to try two or three different versions to finally get the result I want. But this was a very interesting episode too.
And then we have, I presume, let me see. Yeah, Turutoto with Haskell function types, which was an interesting background into the various different types and functions, well, function types that you can have in Haskell, and that clarified a lot of the notation of his previous shows. So mm-hmm. more of these type of things would be awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. T, I shall now refer to him as forever. Or is that patented? So no, better not. Copyright holders.
Ooh, don't go there.
So the Blue Oak model license, and it's one big gotcha. And I was thinking to myself, oh dear, another license. I'd love to hear what the OSI have to say about this, because I think their general stance is stop inventing licenses. But it seemed to be a replacement for a license.
Yeah, I this one, you know, flew a bit over my head, so I'm not really an expert in licenses, and I tend to let other people deal with that when at work, when we need to release something. I personally always release my job under either an Apache license or a take it and do whatever you want with it license.
Yeah. In this, though, he does mention the deprecation notice of MIT and BSD, which is a bit of a misnomer. I don't know if that's the correct word, but that actually is just the reference to somebody's blog article and a personal opinion, as opposed to those two licenses are being deprecated. So if you're under the impression after listening to the show that the Blue Oak license is officially replacing those two with the cooperation of the MIT and the approval of the BSD community, then I don't think that is the case. So it's yet another license. But anyway, the comments are, but a very interesting show. All I had not heard about it, and I can see how it would serve other people's needs. Norris just says the show was fun. This was a great episode. Lots of listeners, including myself, are interested in the legal aspects of hanking. Thanks for the deep dive. My other favorite podcast is related to this episode, Free as in freedom.us.
Yeah, and there was a second comment by Joel D. regarding Norris. Thanks for the feedback and the podcast recommendation. I'll definitely be adding it to my queue.
Might be worth, Joel, might be worth pinging Karen and Bradley Kuhn, who I've been emailing during the week, Karen and Bradley, and ask them to do a show about this, at least mention this Blue Oak license model. It should be kind of cool to get their,
yep.
I'd like to hear their opinion.
And next we had someone called Ken Fallon something, who did a show about Wi-Fi on Android.
I've heard that name before somewhere.
Me too.
Ken
fixes
an
Android firewall Wi-Fi connection that reports no internet and won't connect.
Yes, nobody commented, so obviously of no interest to anybody.
Yeah, because I didn't know that once connected, it would like ping some random servers. You know,
yes.
I know iPhones do ping something that's, was it connect.apple.com or something like that, but that's not random. That's one specific server that they're trying to reach to determine if they have internet connectivity or not. I didn't know that Android would, you know, randomly try to reach some dodgy servers on the internet. That's freaky.
Well, there you go. That's why we've got a firewall on there.
Yeah.
I don't particularly think that that's sending out a UDP packet to a server of a mobile provider is necessarily an insidiously bad thing, you know, just to see that your device is up. But on the other hand.
And hello? We have lost Ken. Oh, here it
is. Hello.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing what they're trying to do, but yeah.
No.
I don't particularly want them to do it.
Not necessarily bad, but I mean, if they had like one server, you know, connect.android.com or google.com or whatever, that I would understand. But apparently it's some kind of not related servers.
It's worthwhile just putting on a firewall and just looking at everything that goes out, even just apps from the F-Droid store. It's just, you're going, wow. the amount of traffic going out.
Yeah, it's a modern surveillance device in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. Speaking of superheroes in the community, we had Yannick interviewing Alan Pope, and now you have to figure out who is the superhero there. Snapscraft and all things related. I really disliked this because it was such a professional interview, even with the music and all sorts, made my interviews sound crap. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, you know, I hit record and then we talk with Alan, and he's so passionate about that, and he knows that subject so well that it was a real delight to interview Alan about
this. It was actually an eye-opener for me. It was, I mean, if you're on board with their whole concept of, adding those little repos to themselves, you know, personal repos, then I get Flatpak is, or Snap's images are a step up from that, at least, that they're automatically updated by the maintainers of the packages.
But a great interview,
thank you.
Yeah, and the confinement too. I mean, Flatpaks are great because you also have like every dependency inside the Flatpak, but snaps are confined. So as Alan said, by default, your snap cannot access your system. You have to specifically, as a developer, give the snaps the authorization to access some part of the system. And then as a user, you can say, no, I don't want this snap to access my internet connection, for example.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Cool.
Okay, made me think I might have a look at that versus the Flatpak, because Cloud2 was on about the Flatpak and didn't see the difference between snaps and Flatpak. But in actual fact, there seems to be advantages.
There you go. The containment is the big difference.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks, I will make my own snap for a certain package. So I will definitely have a listen to this one more time.
It's important.
Yes.
Nobody ever tells Pokey that we agree with him or to go to his head. The following day, is 5G mobile data a danger to your health? By Tlaki. I didn't even for an instant think that it was or how it could be. And his episode is excellent at doing that. And since then, Skeptoid have released an equivalent show.
Well, there is definitely some people in the Netherlands who are adamant and serious about what they call radio sensitivity. So when there is a high frequency electromagnetic radiation in the neighborhood, they get headaches and all kinds of weird symptoms. And that's what they claim. It doesn't have to be the truth. That's what they claim. There's one story about this guy really protesting the fact that there would be a telephone network antenna within 100 meters of his house, and so they put up this tower at some point, and he immediately started the protesting, went to the judge and all legal hassles, and then one of the telecom firms went with him and showed him, yeah, it's a tower, but there's no apparatus in it yet, so it doesn't do anything. It's just a big thing, and it doesn't work yet. But he was at the same time claiming already to be, health would be degraded because of the fact that this thing was there, and that also was the end of the whole legal battle, of course.
And who do you blame for cosmic radiation? I mean, we all get tons of cosmic radiation, but
Yeah, well, but there's the anti-vax, there's the flat Earth, and there's the radio sensitivity. I mean, they all have a grind to air, whatever. But it's just a different subject. But that doesn't mean they're sensible. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So there were no comments on that, but oddly enough, there were on the following episode, Should We Dump the Linux Desktop?
Oh my. Don't start me on that.
Yannick says, should we dump Windows? Hi, Nightwise. While for the most part I agree with your arguments about cross-platform applications, I think the title of this comment is valid as the title of your episode. I can run Audacity on my Linux desktop. I can run Firefox, FreeMind, Visual Studio Code. So my question is, should we dump Windows? And the obvious answer is no, because both our questions are flawed. Should I dump Windows? Should you dump the Linux desktop? Now, those are valid questions. I have personally made the choice to ban Windows from my house because I can do everything I need on a Linux desktop. You said that you can't write documents or make presentations on Linux, and that's perfectly valid reason for you to dump the Linux desktop. But as a general rule, no, we should not dump any desktops before it, be it macOS, Windows, Linux, or any of the exotic ones. As you said in the episode, it's all about choice. Also, you mentioned OpenOffice in this episode. I really hope you meant LibreOffice, because OpenOffice, well, need I say more? By the way, LibreOffice runs on Mac, Windows, Linux, Android. Another great example of cross-platform software. Anyway, thanks for sharing your thoughts, and even though I don't agree with them, I appreciate your point of view. The next comment is read by...
Do we need
yeah,
Linux?
Yeah, sure.
No, okay, oh, go ahead. Oh, okay, no, go ahead. Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Do we need Linux? There is a lot to agree on here. Thank you for the podcast. I certainly agree that the distro obsessiveness is absurd, and there should be more of a focus on applications. And there is so much overlap and duplicated effort in every area of software in the open source world. I tend to think that Microsoft's recent... How do you pronounce this one, Ken? Deliance? Anyway, with openness, is just a case of embrace, extend, exterminate. Essentially, an attempt to get computer science students and programmers to think of the command line and Linux as an esoteric extension of Windows. But who knows thinking? And that was a comment made by Hipster.
And Nightwise commented, DV commented, response to Nightwise. Nightwise, I respect your knowledge in computers, but I disagree on one point. You said something like, need to get things done, only Windows and Mac can do it. Maybe so for you, but I can do many things in Linux, at least for my needs, using Linux for 21 years.
And Deepik follows up and says, the desktop is dead. Love this cast and your own personal podcast of this network. That being said, I wanted to say something again that I said in one of my podcasts, and that is that the desktop is dead. Not dead in the sense of no longer being developed, but the whole concept of the desktop is outmoded. For most people, their day-to-day is their personal tablet and or smartphone. I know many people who no longer would want a desktop or laptop. For me, my company's computer techs have such a bad system setup that most of the rank and file will use any phone app that they can get on their hands, that they can get their hands on in order to avoid using the shared desktop machines our company provides. I love my personal desktop environment, and the lack of customization for Windows and Mac keeps me on Linux. Every time I consider going back to Windows, I eventually end up wistfully checking the status of things like BB4Win and searching for alternative GUI shells. If you care about your personal computing environment, you need Linux. It's like this. In America, a car enthusiast would probably want to be in California because California has a car culture. If you want your environment to respond to what you think it should be for you, you have to do Linux.
And was another comment, that's a comment festival on this episode,
yep,
by Snapdeus, said Linux desktop. The Linux desktop gives up and coming sysadmin... Oh, let me start again. The Linux desktop gives up-and-coming sysadmins a playground to learn Linux, and they will need to know for server administration.
And I will be replying to this by submitting a show. So, the following day, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Following day, we had Spectre, a Meltdown, an OpenBSD, and Our Future. This was an interesting show. Very, very scary. Claudio M. says, hello, fellow puffy disciple. pretty good episode on speculative execution stuff that Intel and others are dealing with. And don't feel alone, I also run OpenBSD as of late. Been dabbling with the BSDs since about 3 years ago, and for all of them, OpenBSD
and we've
is
lost
the
again.
Once again? For, am I here again?
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah,
you're cutting out.
One sec.
So, I will read the comment while Ken tries to resolve
it. No, I can do it. Hold on.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I'm just going to put the window where I can see it. I think the keyboard is, the push to talk is not working. Where was I?
Edit point.
Okay. Blah, 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 blah. I'm running OpenBSD on old Toshiba Protégé M400 convertible tablet PC, as well as on the ThinkPad X230 at work. Yeah, certain things like wireless aren't up to par as yet, as they are on Linux or even FreeBSD, which I also run on the laptop at work. But it's a great OS for security and support. Another HPR contributor by the name of Sigflup also runs OpenBSD, and to be honest, her use of it has piqued my curiosity to the OS. So rest assured, you're in good company here as an OpenBSD user on HPR.
Yeah, I use FreeBSD at work.
Do you now?
Yeah, I do. Well, they make me.
Well, there is this old saying, FreeBSD is the best Linux distribution.
Except it's not Linux.
Yeah, I know. It's half joke because it's an excellent system and it's Linux compatible. So that's why, anyway.
So the following day we had Copa Pasta, copying and pasting on Linux, X-Select, Xcel, clipboard managers, GPM, screen and more. And I was wondering why Klaatu was doing an episode that I intended to do, and then I realized it because I asked on the mailing list, and I actually had found out the answer here prior to doing the show, but this was an excellent breakdown as to exactly what is happening and why the commands that I found to get what it is that I needed to worked. So thank you very much, Klaatu.
Thank you indeed.
The following day, we had GNU Awk Part 14, Redirection Input and Output Part 1. And this is another in the episode on Awk, and was not aware this was even possible.
Everything is possible with Awk.
Apparently. I just used it as a one-liner, but it's a full Monty programming language, as can be seen.
But yeah, I also tend to use it in a, you know, as a pipe in another process. But
yeah, exactly.
It can do lots of things.
Yeah, it's a very, very handy tool indeed for particular use, but it's broad. Yeah.
I've had times in the past where I've needed to create file names based on variables and ran into issues. I don't know if I would have had those issues now with a little bit more experience, but this, what he described in this show, and obviously his show notes are excellent as always, what he described was exactly what I had wanted to do at that time. And I was told I shouldn't do it that way. Yet, now, if I ever invent the time machine, I can go back and say to that person, but Dave says, GNU Awk Part 14, which will be released in 10 years' time. So, are you successful? Click to find out more.
Yeah,
is this clickbait title. Or what did you think, guys?
I'm trying to remember the show, actually. It was so short that it probably didn't sink into my mind.
I actually didn't have the time to listen to all the podcasts, so to be honest. So, no, sorry. Missed this one, but I will have a listen to it anyway, because it's 4 minutes. I can spare that in my busy life, and the subject interests me. So, yeah.
Lost Ken again.
Yeah, I think he's all the time going out to... Hey, there he is!
No, I'm back. I'm back. The show is about... I remember I was just in bringing my kids to horse riding at the time. This show was about do you need to be successful in a project or not? And people in this project people come into the IRC and go, hey, your project could be a lot more successful if you did this, that, and the next thing. And the guy on the head of the project goes, yeah, but we don't want to be successful. We just want to do what we want to do. And if there are a few people who want to do that, then that's great. And if there are more people who don't, then, you know, we're as successful as we want to be. So that's essentially the essence of the show.
Okay. Yeah. I remember now. Yeah.
And it actually applies to HBR. Yeah. It applies to HBR in a lot of ways, in that I particularly don't care how many listeners we have per se. I'm more interested in getting more hosts. The more hosts we have, the healthier the project is. And if we get more hosts, then by definition, we're getting more listeners. But I, you know, fine, all due respect, listeners are not contributing to the network in the same way that somebody who is a host is. And even if that listener, and you've been listening for 10 years, and you just come on and introduce yourself, you then, from that point on, have you done your bit for HBR. You have contributed your show, you have increased the amount of commons works that are out there. So
on that note, just a small thing. So I made my first contribution to HBR I don't know, a couple of months ago, and I was a little anxious about the comments I would receive. So the first comment I get started with the title, "Now this is embarrassing." And you can imagine my response to reading that title. And then it turns out he was embarrassed himself, because he had been thinking about doing a show like the one I made for 10 years. And I just beat him to it by accident, because I didn't know he was planning. I didn't know the guy, of course. And he was lucky, happy with the way I did it. So everything was fine in the end. But yeah, probably, I guess, there are a lot of people out there thinking, oh, yeah, you know what? Well, should I? Shouldn't I? All these guys I listen to seem to be so much experts and knowledgeable, and I'll never fit in. Forget it. Forget it. Just submit a show. Go out there. Share your thoughts with us. Do something new. Be adventurous. You know, there's this thing called the circle of confidence. And the circle of confidence is where you feel happy, you know, and everything's fine. But all personal progress is just outside that circle of confidence, just a little bit outside. So do something new. Submit a show. It's easy. Pick Audacity, record something you're passionate about, or something you know something about, whatever subject. I mean, it's Hegger Public Radio. So this is my, it's not a rant, it's my what's the word for it? It's my shout out to the community. Participate and give us your shows. Come on, guys, you can do it.
Yeah,
that was basically I had to get it off my chest for a moment there. Yeah.
Well done. Sorry. I would just add, you don't even need Audacity. Pick your phone, hit record, say hi, I'm so and so, and I'm going to talk about this, and there you go. Nobody's going to judge you. We're all going to listen to you.
And listen, if you're out there and you are just a listener to HBR, you can, by picking out your phone, pressing record, and going, hi, I'm XYZ, whoever you are, and I've been listening to HBR for so long. I do it on my work. I have nothing to contribute, but at least here I am, and I'm a member of the community. Nice to meet you all, finally. Yeah? Then we know you exist, and then you're part of the community. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. And if that's the only show we ever hear from you, great. Yeah? It's the start. And then, of course, I trick you in, because you'll say something in the show and I'll go, hey, I want you there. But that's my clever and cunning plan.
So let's just get you to do the
first show. Just introduce you.
Yeah, it's like drugs. You know, we give him something small, and then we put our hooks into them and we drag him in.
Yeah, no, really, really, it's yeah. Once you've done your first HBR episode, then it's going to be like, hey, this thing is great. I want to do more.
Or not. I mean, there are quite a lot of people who have done one show. They just sent in some comments, and then we never heard from them again. And that's actually fine, because they've done a show. We know they exist. Fine. So, reply to Nightwise's podcast, which was not the podcast which we are all listening to, as well as the...
Wait. Aren't we missing one? 2818?
Yes, writing game in Haskell Science Part 1.
Sorry. Writing web game in Haskell Science Part 1. This was Turototo again, and it was about how he defined his database tables. And again, I am left in awe of the man, I must say. But this kind of made some kind of sense about the basic levels that you would need to go to in order to design a web game.
In Haskell.
In Haskell, yeah, yes.
I think there's enough material here in all those episodes to actually write a book about writing web game in Haskell.
Hopefully it will form the basis of that. That would be very cool. The following day, we had a reply to Nightwise's podcast by Kevin Wisher, also known as Ahuka, also known as I'm retired. Na 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 na. Congratulations to Kevin out there and his lovely wife, who will be going RVing across the US of A, living the dream. Well, this was about the pirates and individual corporations and his reply to that, and it was it was good actually. We do need both, but do need to keep ourselves. I think the game has changed as well, a smidgen.
I personally think that a podcast can be released by individuals like a pirate radio, as he said, but it can also be well produced. I mean, those two things are not incompatible.
They're not mutually exclusive. No, exactly.
Yeah, and it's quite easy now. As Jerome said, we can use Audacity. It's a free software. There are tons of free music and sound effects that you can mix and match to build an identity to your show. And so that brings a little touch of, semi-pro thing, but still you're still an individual in your basement, recording a show in the middle of the night because you also have a day job, and that's great. And radio networks do publish as podcasts nowadays, they're radio shows that they're doing live. Every show, but they're just releasing that as a podcast. I don't consider that as a real podcast. It's just a recording that they're publishing afterwards. But congratulations to each and every independent podcasters in the world. And let's keep producing independent and narrow casting, as Hauke said. Because I think that's the way to do it, really.
Yeah, it's not to disparage anybody making a podcast, because I'm doing it myself, and I love it to do it. But just the other week, I discovered it was brought to my attention that in the Netherlands we have a public broadcasting system, and the broadcast on the radio, but they also make podcasts that they don't broadcast. And one of the series, and I know it's Dutch, so it's not for everybody, but it's about the history of the radio, because at the moment the radio is about 100 years old, public radio. So they do a podcast about the history of the Dutch radio, and several episodes are about the radio, how the radio worked during and after the Second World War. And they have this old archived recordings that I don't know how anybody ever recorded that at that time, but probably they did. And it's the it's in Dutch, but the broadcast they made during the war, you become as a person really, really cold the way this is done. But at the same time, after the first radio, Liberation Radio, just after being liberated by the Americans or the English, it's amazing what kind of topics they cover and how they interview people about the daily stuff. That's really that's really something that, that needs to be out there. So kudos on the Dutch Public Radio for making this Hello Here Hilversum podcast series. So I had to say that, sorry.
So I'm Googling for that because I will be, I'm not Googling actually, I'm going as you know. So that will be of interest to me. But I think one
yeah,
point
sure. I'll can give you the link if you want, but it's I'll message you the title, the exact title. No worries.
Thanks, dude. But I think as well the point that Ahuka was making is well founded in that I can now subscribe to the local my local radio station at home where my parents are. And listen to the obituary section of all the people who have passed away, which is a big thing in Ireland. So, you know, stuff like that has as a distribution mechanism, podcasting has made that possible. So, yeah, it's good. Bit of both. But I guess that's the point. Interviewing some of the exhibitors.
Nope.
You missed one.
What? How is that possible? Oh, yeah, because I went to the next one. Sorry. I was lining up the next show because there was no comments. Dave, where are you now? episode 29, CERT Home Security Tips. And this was on privacy and security. And this was just very basic tips that everybody should be doing. Really awesome to get this into the network.
But what amazes me is that those security tips, they should not be imposed on the end user. I mean, it should be illegal to sell a router with admin as the username and admin as the password. Those vendors should go to jail for that. Well, I'm it's a little exaggeration, but you know what I mean.
Any other default password would be wrong. I mean, there is this site where you can just look up the default password. So even if they don't do admin, but something else, it will appear on this list. And
the thing should not be working before the password is changed. That's all. Yeah. That's all. You know, there's just a little leaflet. Connect to your router and change the password. That should be mandatory.
No, not even that. We have here a router producer the root password or the admin password is on the sticker on the device, and it's some random 20-30 character thing. So it's
that will work.
Yeah, it works definitely. I hate the supplier, but I mean, I love the fact that they're doing that.
Yeah, and they're doing it because they have had court cases where that was brought to their attention.
Well, and speaking about security, so I just something I would like to run by you two. I sometimes put my phone into access point mode, so my laptop can connect to my phone and then via the phone to the GSM network for data. And I renamed the access point to FBI Mobile Unit 335. am I bad?
Except now everybody knows your access point name and we'll try to hack it. So if you're in the Netherlands, if you see a FBI access point, it's probably
I was wondering
James.
Who that Wi-Fi network was.
And there's a list of funny Wi-Fi network names. One of them, it only hurts when IP. And IP is then the letter I and the letter P. But you get the point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Are they one in the apartment block was... I can hear you upstairs. It was a little bit more explicit than that.
Doing the nasty.
I can hear you upstairs.
All right.
Okay. Anyway, next day.
Yeah. Interviewing some exhibitors at the 2019 VCFE.org event by someone called Jerome something. We don't care about
his
name.
Jerome.
He's Dutch.
Jerune.
Are you the except for Ken? Are you the only Dutch representative on HPR?
It's enough.
Okay. I interviewed some of the exhibitors at the recent VCFE.org event in München, Deutschland.
And for somebody who has never listened to HPR, we know this because we brought you on. This is your typical HPR
interview. We know who you are.
This is a typical HBR episode. Hallway track. You absolutely nailed it. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you.
Walk it on, shove the microphone in front of somebody's nose and go, what's this?
Yeah, you need exactly. to you need to give me the list of the gear you use, because I kind of want to do something like that for Occam. So I guess we will be.
Well, it's I told you earlier which one I bought. Yeah. So it's laying around here somewhere.
I will find it. Yeah, it's in one of our many Telegram groups.
I'll look it up because I'm sitting at the desk where the thing should be. So in a few seconds, I'll tell you which one it is, which mark and model. I'm blank.
I bet you're going to have a lot of interview episodes after Occamp, Ken.
I'm not, because you two guys are going to be the ones walking around, and I'm going to sit at the table and just chill for a while.
Well, remember to bring some stickers. That's not necessarily true. I mean, the last time I was in England with Occamp, I sampled some excellent beers, so I
can do
wouldn't
that too.
Guarantee the fact that I will be only doing interviews. No, sorry.
So... this was an excellent show. Well done. Great guys. Very interesting. Especially the Eastern European stuff, or Eastern Germany stuff. East Germany stuff, Eastern European stuff.
Yeah, they had their own world. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And my bill the following day tempted us, yes, he did, with a show on What's in the Box, part one, which obviously means that he...
Hows us another show, part two.
He hows us another show. There he does. And he didn't get it working. Spoiler.
Yeah.
Which means he definitely owes us a show. And no, I'm not signing off on that invoice and my bill for the microscope. Thank you very much. Alden P. told us
talking about what's in the box, I just opened the box that I have here to answer your question for the interview device. I bought myself a Zoom, Z-O-O-M, that's the brand, and the device is called a H4N Pro. It's a handy recorder, so it can do multi-track recording, it can do four-channel simultaneous mono recording, it can do two parallel stereo encodings, all on an SD card, maximum of 32 gigs, and it has excellent sound quality.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Just to follow up on the topic we were just discussing.
I will need to sell my liver and probably my right arm for that, but yeah.
Oh, they're not. You can get a H2, which is what
it's
I
not
have.
So, it's not so expensive.
Okay, I will look that. Let's move on with the shows.
Gen 2, why you use it? Another Gen 2 listener, Alden P, thanked Norrist for the comment on his episode, which tempted him to do a Gen 2 show.
Yeah. Is Gen 2, is that an arch derivative?
Yeah, it must be. It's one of those weird eccentric that nobody is using anymore, obviously, or there will be more shows about it. Hint, hint. Stoke the fire of flame.
Nope. That's nasty.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. Gen 2 users are used to...
some
bashing? No. No. Actually, I know a lot of people who would swear by Gen 2.
Yeah, I know of several people who are really into Gen 2, but you're right. If they love it so much, let's put forward, make a show about it. Sure.
Yep. Next.
And GNU Orc, part 15, part input and output redirection, part 2, which was the second part of the show, which is required reading if you're using Orc and want to split up files.
So those show
this time using variables.
The show are getting so long that they are starting to do them in parts
one,
inside
part
the series.
A.
Well, if I understood correctly, this is going to be the last one.
And the final one this month was more text-to-speech trials, where I found two on Jeroen's show he did on 2792, playing around with text-to-speech synthesis, which was a completely non-controversial show. No. I found additionally Mimic, M-I-M-I-C, which is Microsoft's text-to-speech engine, and also Google text-to-speech, which interfaces with Google's API. And I included some the same string that Jeroen was using in those. So if you want to have a listen to that.
Yeah, that I definitely would. Yeah. And I don't know. It seems that every time I do a topic, it's somehow, I don't know, there is some controversial stuff in there. And I am reminded of this movie called Roger Rabbit. And he has this wife. And his wife always says, I'm not bad. I'm just drawn this way. So that's my reply for the moment.
So we will now do the comments that were not already covered. And the first one was...
What? But I'm, what? I'm going to have to leave. I'm sorry.
So long. Farewell.
I will see you. Say good night.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, see no, you. Copyrighted music.
Thanks again, thanks again, HPR listeners and contributors. And we'll see you next time. Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye bye. Okay, so we can't sing when he goes because it's a copyright infringement. I can think
sing,
of a tune, but
open source song. So like, join us now,
no,
share
don't. Oh, don't. I heard Richard Stallman once wrote or whatever and sang the open source song, and it's in a weird score type setting. And no. Okay. Shall we do the six comments? The one that are not green. Shall you start? Shall I start?
I'll start with the comment that I made to Klaatu on the introduction to Git with pen and paper. Can someone please step forward and do a video with this show as a soundtrack? So that was the show where Klaatu did, using post-it notes, he described how Git works.
Oh, and yeah. Okay.
And if somebody could listen to that and basically do a video of that, of what he's describing on actual pen and paper and post it to YouTube, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
And also there's a, for those interested in Git, there's learninggitbranching.js.org. learngitbranching.js.org.
Speaking of Git, there is this site that I encountered yesterday that I really like to share. Its name is oshitgit.org or .com, I don't know, but oshitgit. And it's about how you can fix your screw-ups that you made with Git. And it's pretty advanced in the sense that it's they're down-to-earth, actual, real problems that you can have. And then it describes how to fix them and why that works. So it's a brilliant site.
And it's .com.
Ah, okay. oshitgit.com. Yeah, and it's got a Twitter account, so you can, yeah.
Actually, this is... I'm amazed at how many of these I've used since I started using Git and work.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's so enthusiastic about Git, and at the same time, we're all trying to... We need to solve this hassle that we're in. So, but yeah, it's the best there is, I mean, compared to all the other stuff. Anyway, okay, so... Then Clacky. There is, yeah, Clacky made a Bash Coproc the Future 2009 is here. Comment number three by Clacky regarding org coprocesses. I heard your comment again on the community news and discovered that you were talking about org coprocesses also, not just backticks. Smiley face. I didn't know about them. Looking forward to the episode. For anyone wanting to read ahead of the class, the document page is here. And then he has a URL on GNU.org, software, georg, manual, HTML, note, etc. Comment number four by Dave Morris regarding our coprocesses. Hi, Clacky. Yes, thanks for the link. I thought I put that link in my notes, went and looked and found I'd messed it up. So I just fixed it. The show is number 15 in the series and is now on the site as Hacker Public Radio episode 2824.
And Yannick, in reply to Yannick's show interview with Martin Wimpress, Klaatu says this was a great interview. This was most informative origin story of a distribution I've ever heard. The little details like building the internal distro in droplets on DigitalOcean based on a $10 voucher are fascinating and provided a real insight into how some of these cool little projects actually happen. Thank you for this, Yannick, the French guy from Switzerland.
And next was by Nightwise. Should podcasters be pirates? By Nightwise. And Clatou commented, this is one of those episodes I'd love to have played on NPR or some de facto talk radio station. On the one hand, it's preaching to the choir here on HBR, but then again, the topic is actually bigger than just podcasting. Where have all the blogs gone? The little indie website and fan sites. The internet in general is a lot more cookie cutter now than I think it was ever meant to be. As Dave Morris says in an earlier comment, it's up to us to keep grassroots alive. Nah, I think we're
very, very true. Thank you, Clatou. So that was all the comments. So we'll mosey over to the mail list discussions, which was a wrap up of this website. Static website generators, which I haven't had a chance to look at because, life. There was a large discussion on fair use copyrighted clips, which I'm not going to go into because all the comments related to that are going to be coming up in the feed in one of the shows. So the remaining issue, so that was all the comment discussions there. And let's go over to the events calendar.
Oh, yeah.
So, June, TMG Texas Linux Fest, that's already on this week. PyCon in Illinois, Samba X, MiniDepConf is on the weekend after that, Hong Kong. MiniDepConf Self, Southeast Linux Fest, is on the 16th. That's going to be of interest to us. Charlotte, NC, USA. North Carolina, I'm guessing.
I don't know.
OSS China, which is KubeCon, Cloud Native Con, and Open Summit in Shanghai in China the following month. We have EuroPython in Brazil, Zen Summit, Tubix, never heard of that, in Germany, EuroPython, OzCon, DebConf will be in Brazil on the 21st. And the call for papers is closing today, so too late for you. Let me see. ONS, Open Network Summit in Antwerp. You have 2 weeks to submit your papers. LISA, which is the Large Installation System Administration Conference in Portland, Oregon. Big thing for those who are into system administration. That shuts on the 18th. OpenSUSE Austria Summit. Asia Summit, sorry, that is closing, and LiboCon and PostgresConf. If you have comments or if you have papers that you want to submit for those shows, you can go ahead and do that. Tags and summaries. There have been 10 shows added which didn't have them. And if you would like to contribute comments, then please report missing tags on the HBR page. Dave maintains a page there. There are now 607. There are only 607 shows without comments, 571 without tags. So this has come down to there's a lot more shows now with comments and summaries, etc., than there were previously. So if you can contribute to those, that would be absolutely awesome, especially if you go down and see your own name in there. Like I see my name in some of them. I need to make sure and go back and listen to some of those and clear them up. So, anything else, Jeroen?
Not that I can think of at the moment. No.
Super duper. I wanted to ask you that that shirt that you got from Vistaprint, what's the quality of it like?
The shirt from Vistaprint.
With the HPR logo on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's sewn, it's not printed. So it's very durable. And I have several. With different logos on them, printed by Vistaprint, and yeah, I can safely endorse that. No worries there.
Okay, cool. Well, I think it's only fitting that we should end with the free software song. So join me now.
Yeah, you go
and share ahead the and software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be. free. Join us now and share the software. Okay, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.